Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Hey, hobby hackers. Welcome back to Hacks and Hobbies. Today's guest brings a behind-the-curtain perspective most people never get to hear. Tim is a former quaint finance engineer who built a 500K side hustle in social media growth. He's the author of Framed, A Villain's Perspective on Social Media, a number one bestseller, and he's designed feeds, notifications, and algorithms at social media startup. Tim, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back.
Hey, Junaid. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's jump in. What does it actually mean to break the rules on Instagram, and how did you start helping clients grow this way?
There's a pretty large gray area between what we would think of as illegal behavior and behavior that violates terms of service on social media platforms. So when I talk about breaking the rules, Of course, I know some people who were breaking the law, but really in my space, I was talking about violating these terms of service as they are defined by private technology companies. Yeah. And oftentimes these rules or these guidelines exist for a reason. It's that by violating them or exploiting them, you are able to make profit. And that's what I did with my business.
Dude, that is so cool. Now, you come from a deeply analytical world, a finite in quant. Quant.
So as in like quantitative.
Quantitative, quant, finance, and engineering. What pulled you into the social media game? Talk to us about that.
During most of my adventure, I did have a full-time job. And that full-time job was for most of the period in quantitative finance. During my first job, I was approached by people who were essentially DJs. They were involved in the nightlife scene here in New York City. And in that world, they were very, very attuned to what people were doing and what people wanted to get out of their social media platforms and their social media followings. So they realized that people were willing to pay money to get more followers. And they brought me in as the engineer who could help automate and scale the business and hopefully help them make even more money. So originally, it wasn't my idea. Yeah. I was brought in as what I describe as the code monkey. I ended up becoming much more than that.
That's amazing, Tim. Now, what's cool is that you worked on the mechanics of feed algorithms, those push notifications and recommendations. What did you learn that most content creators never even think about? Because that's something I want to learn. That's something that's going to help me get in front of even more audiences.
That's true. And for me, it was somewhat unexpected as well. I only had this involvement after I had started writing my book. So I had started writing Framed, and the whole point of it was to talk about this Instagram underworld. Because I had a reputation in that space, I was then brought in by a startup to actually design these persuasive technology systems at the startup. By designing the systems and learning more about it and understanding more in the academic sense, like what was going on, I certainly came away with a lot of things that, as a rule breaker, I had some indication of how it worked. Yeah. But really then as an engineer building them himself, I came away with quite a lot. And the main takeaway for me is that it's so complicated that there is nobody out there who can tell you with authority how to actually beat the algorithm. Because what the algorithm might have meant yesterday or a year ago or 10 years ago is totally different than it might be tomorrow. So it's very, very difficult to understand. And anyone proclaiming expertise in this space should be viewed with suspicion.
You know, I am suspicious of a lot of these people who are messaging me on Instagram or LinkedIn and Facebook claiming that they are podcast promoters or they can helped me get thousands of followers and views on my posts and my podcast. In this attention economy, the difference between growth and obscurity often comes down to knowing the levers. Do they know any of these levers, or they're just making stuff up? What were some of the rule-bending tactics that worked best for your clients' growth?
For our clients, we were really at a position where we were able to exploit what was a very loose daily activity limit. Mm. So what we automated was spam, but it was spam sourced from our customers' accounts. Mm-hmm. Anyone who might message you on LinkedIn and say, hey, I can get you this many more views or connections, it's probably true if they can send out 1,000 messages per day. Wow. But we know that on LinkedIn, it's very, very restricted how many messages you could send out.
Yeah, LinkedIn locks you in at, 200 messages or maybe 100 messages a day?
Yeah, even less if you're not on premium. It's it's a tiny amount.
Yeah.
So it's really abusing this lack of guideline or this lack of guardrail in the Instagram space. But this is not to say that every person selling a marketing service is a scammer. There are certainly practices that work, whether we would like them to or not. Mm-hmm. And there also is a difference between good marketing and bad marketing.
Yeah.
And there's a pretty wide area there between just marketing that's really good and marketing that's really good and happens to violate the rules.
That's so powerful. Where do you personally draw the line between optimization and manipulation? You mentioned good marketing versus bad marketing. What are some of the things that, let's say, you know, really genuine podcasters should be doing to, you know, benefit their podcast, benefit their community? Like, what are those some of the things that you found?
It's really difficult because there is a wide spectrum here. Mm-hmm. In my book, in chapter 9, it's titled Punishing Crime. And it addresses this very, very wide, this breadth of practices and different understandings between things that are ethical and normal and not disruptive, all the way through to the most awful crimes that are perpetrated on social media today. I would like to think that everyone exists somewhere in between and hopefully on the more compliant side. Yeah. But the truth is this, even if you're someone in the marketing space and you're saying, hey, I'm going to pay for leads, you would think on the surface there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. But what you might not know is that those email addresses you're paying for or that structured LinkedIn data that you're paying for might have been generated in a way that violated the terms of use. And you don't necessarily know that, but not to say it's the same thing as receiving stolen goods in the real world, but there are ethical violations here, and that at each layer, as data becomes big data and it goes through data brokers, you don't necessarily have this confidence that what you're paying for abided by the rules when you bought it, or certainly abided by the rules when it was collected.
Man, that's such a good point. And I've seen these emails, like, for example, when we were going to traffic and conversion, I would get these messages from some of the people there, and they'd be like, hey, we have the entire list of all the people that are going to be attending at this event. Would you like to buy it? And other people, you know, like very similar emails would come down. Well, unfortunately, traffic and conversion canceled this year. They weren't able to put that event together. But you're absolutely right. Where are they getting these, names and addresses of people? It's a really good question that we should be asking. And a really good thing that you pointed out for us here as well.
Yeah, I think as we've seen more regulations, especially coming out of Europe, opting in has a totally different meaning today than it did even 5 years ago. Yeah. And the fact that somebody might not have opted in to having their information exposed is a risk. So you say, hey, somebody was peddling a list of attendees that was not above board. There's no way. Mm-hmm. But I've even seen it in the more innocent sense. So I've maybe registered for a local race in my hometown. And rather than responding to everyone using MailChimp or something that anonymized all the email addresses, they did a reply all to every participant in the race.
Yes.
And you might not like that, definitely got the message out, but it also exposed an email address, which we would have some expectation that that would
Yeah.
remain private. That actually is a privacy violation that they could have been fined for, especially in Europe. So it just goes to show how much things have changed.
Yeah. No, that's so true, and we've seen that many, many times, especially when you have teacher emails going to all the parents in that classroom, and yeah, now you have email addresses of all the parents, and you could easily do all sorts of crazy things. But you're right, you gotta know if they opted for their emails to be exposed, did they sign up, and all of the things. There's some tactics that people do where they'll create a special email for every single thing that they sign up for. And then if they find that email in a different database, then they know exactly who's the one who's selling this stuff. Now, Tim, can you walk us through a success story where these principles made a massive difference between optimization and manipulation?
I would say that the reason the Instagram growth space was so profitable and it was so maybe in your face in 2017 and 2018 was simply because it worked. And anyone could employ these practices to reliably grow their Instagram following by hundreds, if not single-digit thousands of followers per month. Today, if somebody could guarantee you 1,000 followers per month, the price tag on that would be quite high. When I was involved with Shark Social, which is the name that I, kind of ascribed to the company that I worked with, we had plenty of customers getting 500 followers per month, and we were only charging 30, 40, 50, $60 per month. So I would say that on the surface, that was a gray area, if not just totally violating the terms, but it was not necessarily illegal. There wasn't a, at the time, there was not a legal precedent that said it was illegal. However, it was definitely on the side of manipulation. And that's true even today, where when you receive any interaction on any one of your social media channels, you have a basic belief that it is real. It was dispatched by a human hand. However, with our business, none of it was. It was all automated. It just happened to use a human persona. So we still have that issue today, and it still exists because it actually is so effective.
Yeah, you're so right. And earlier today I spoke with somebody and who said, you know, the vanity metrics is kind of real. Like, for people to take you seriously, if you don't have the big numbers, it's very hard to refer you, right? I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And yes, it does matter. People do see those numbers, and it does affect them. So you're saying that even though these are borderline gray area, essentially, right? It still works because it's very effective.
There's no separating humans from these digital markers of importance. And as you've seen, you have quite a following across many different platforms. You've probably been doing it long enough where you even find that it plays into your own biases. When you're evaluating different guests for your shows, people to collaborate with, brand opportunities, some part of us always has us looking at that follower count or that single integer.
So true, so true. All right, we got a quick fire round here. Let's go. Now, you mentioned you wish you got into tennis. Who is your greatest of all time, or your goat?
Yeah, so tennis is one of those sports that I've always wanted to play. For me, I'm an endurance athlete, and sometimes as an endurance athlete, you tend to think that your skills just translate to other skill-based sports. That in my case was not true with tennis. So I've had some very embarrassing. Let's just say I've lost a lot of tennis balls, And for me, really, this interest was kind of renewed after I moved to New York 2 years ago and saw the US Open here. And that
Nice.
was like a really, even seeing some of the earlier matches just really helped me understand, like, once maybe once I'm done running or once I'm
Yeah.
not as serious of an athlete in other categories, I really want to go all in and I want to take some tennis lessons here and learn
Nice.
it, because every time I pass by the courts, I'm still thinking about it.
What about this new game that's picked up a lot of steam? I know my neighbors are playing it. I see places opening up. You probably know what game I'm gonna
Yeah,
mention.
pickleball.
Pickleball. What are
Yeah.
your thoughts on that, and have you played that game?
I love sports. In my, free time, I'm also a sports writer. So I've been exposed to a lot of different sports and different fandoms, but mainly running. So for me, just as often as I would run by tennis courts in areas where space is a little bit more constrained, there are pickleball courts. So every day here on the West Side Highway in New York City, I run by the pickleball courts right by the helipad. And to me, I think it looks a little ridiculous. But people say that there actually is quite a lot of crossover between like tennis skills and pickleball skills. So it's likely that if I ended up participating in one, I'll get dragged into the other.
My neighbor set up a court on their driveway, all summer long, and I know my brother-in-law has been going to play pickleball with his cousins and whatnot. So I was like, that sounds pretty interesting. Somebody mentioned it's almost like you're a miniaturized version standing on top of a ping pong table.
Yeah, because it doesn't bounce as far. I feel the same way. It seems like the proximity is more similar to ping pong.
I might have to make a little AI image around miniaturized version of us standing on top of a tennis ball, a ping pong table. Now, Tim, your favorite book is Liar's Poker. What lesson from that book still resonates with you today?
Liar's Poker is an all-time classic. It started Michael Lewis's career, and he's, I would say, a celebrated American nonfiction author. So, as someone who later wrote his own nonfiction book, I can say that Michael Lewis inspired a lot of us in his self-involvement, in his like gonzo presence in the book, meaning he was a character in the story, but there was a much larger story to be told. So in a large sense, I channeled him when I wrote Framed. But also it's one of the all-time greats as far as finance books go. So it's about his time at Solomon Brothers after he graduated from Yale. And it talked about all the minutiae, all the weird stuff that they did as analysts and beyond at the firm. So I found it very, very interesting to me. And like I said, I tried to channel a lot of it. But most people would know Michael Lewis more as the guy who wrote Moneyball or The Blind Side, or actually more of his sports mashups.
Gotcha. I'll have to go check it out. I love books. It's some of the fun things. I mean, it's books are amazing because they enable you to pull the part of you that's been hiding. Right,
Yep.
Gary Vaynerchuk's book, Crushing It, enabled me to step out of myself and really actually start the podcast. Like I wouldn't have started it unless I had read that book. So I'm really glad that they're able to take action and get moving forward. Last question: if social media platforms were characters in a movie, which one would play the villain and why?
There's so much of an effort now made to seem like they aren't villainous, or that the intentions are pure and are community oriented. You can see the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars spent on this very careful branding and careful wording, especially in the largest platforms of today. I do see Meta as a fundamentally villainous platform, but not from the sense of that it's evil, more in the sense that it is guiding humanity towards like unproductive labor or like unproductive habits in general. So I see it as like a net cost and a drain. So I view most, I don't think that there's a savior. I don't think that there's a social media platform that is pure. I would say Meta is pretty bad. And then I think also what Reddit has become, the way that Reddit has kind of strayed from its original mission and has also been a vector for like manipulation, has also been quite notable.
What was Reddit's original mission, if you don't mind sharing?
Free speech. Free speech. And you can say that it still exists more on Reddit than it does in other places, but the Reddit, some of the senior executives and one of the original founders has come back on the record and said the point of Reddit was never free speech, which sounds ridiculous. But as someone who was using the site back in the day, let's just say all of the comments in response to this brought up about a dozen examples of both interviews and like postings where Reddit was defending free speech at a time where it really mattered, and a time where like openness on the internet was really being redefined. And unfortunately, in the interest of profit, it's been co-opted. And a lot of that is addressed in my book, especially in the chapter Algorithms and Truth. You can imagine kind of how there's this natural push and pull between advertisers, platforms, and then users who, have their own interests.
Tim, thank you so much. This was really mind-opening and slightly a little bit terrifying. I can't wait to read the book. It's going to be, I can't wait to read the book. And, in our next episode, we're actually diving into your book, Framed. We'll unpack some of the deeper psychological levers behind growth manipulation and how platforms train creators more than creators train their audiences. Give us a teaser. What's one uncomfortable truth about social media you'll reveal next?
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And in the next episode, I think we can look more to some of these lines of manipulation as far as how users who are hoping to build businesses and build their personas online are tricked or misguided into spending as much time as possible on social media when it doesn't further their goals whatsoever.
Thank you so much, Tim. All right, hobby hackers, don't miss part two. We're flipping the algorithm on its head. You're not going to miss it, or you're not going to want to miss it. All right, we'll see you in the next episode with more insights from Tim. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.